You're listening to The Word from Westwood, a series of podcasts featuring sermons preached at Westwood United Methodist Church in Los Angeles, California.
My first church job, as I've shared before with some of you, was working in a Baptist church as a pianist. Now, to make it really clear, I was not there because of some particular theological outlook or faith compunction. It was a job. It paid money, which was really my only criterion when I was an undergraduate student. Use a skill I had to make some money, and this is the place where I was able to do it. Now, it's somewhat ironic that I got my start not only in a Baptist church, but in a conservative Baptist church, which needed a tether line to even stay within the realm of right wing. Yeah, that's right. Now, let's say Westwood is a marked contrast to what I was experiencing over 40 years ago. Well, part of my job when I was at this Baptist church was playing for Sunday evening services, morning worship, of course, as well as special event weekends. And every year, there was a special event that to this day keeps me more than at arm's length to a particular genre of biblical literature, apocalyptic material. You see, the biblical prophecy weekend was the time when the books of Daniel and St. John's Revelation were put in full view with all of their gory details and visions, which must have been produced by the writers when they were in some kind of altered state, right? Well, it was an opportunity in that church for the men, and yes, the women were not supposed to say a word, but they were expected to be there. It was an opportunity for the men to debate minutiae and hidden cryptic meanings about the words and the phrases that were contained in these books. This was a congregation that it's safe to say was fixated on the rapture, how it would happen, when it would happen, and if you disagreed with the groupthink or their particular timeline, you were considered apostate. Now, with my nominal religious background at the time, this experience was usually enlightening, to say the least. These good-hearted Baptists not only believed in this, but they were honestly and absolutely convinced that this was going to happen in their lifetime, not in some metaphorical way, but it was actually going to happen in their lifetime. I still remember conversations that I had with some of the older people in the congregation asking about their future plans. Were they going to be doing trips or anything? And their response to me was baffling. They said, I'm really not thinking about it because the rapture is going to happen any day now, any time now. All the signs are there, so I'm just not going to think about the future. It was an odd way to be experiencing life from my vantage point. Now, it would be very easy to be dismissive of all of this. But what confounded me is that in spite of these, to me, strange theological notions, this little church was a family that had profound love for each other, and they were there to support each other in the good times and the bad times, and they were authentic with each other about the fact that we all have clay feet and we are all prone to stumble. And they could celebrate that with each other. This was a congregation that did not belong to a big institution. And while they certainly had their theological peculiarities, they tried their best. They tried their best to be church. To be church for each other. It served as a really important lesson to me that ultimately, being church, being the church is about personal relationship. It's not about a specific theology or belief or the bigger institutions that we sometimes choose to find our identity in. Real church is about living in the messiness of life with each other, pure and simple. Well, of course, today's lectionary passage would happen to be an apocalyptic passage. No matter how hard I try to stay away, it's like this relentlessly returning boomerang. It's always there. We catch up with Jesus after his controversial teaching in the temple, and he was traveling to the Mount of Olives with Peter, James, and Andrew, and John. And he let slip, while he was traveling with his followers, a comment about the great temple at which they were all looking and the monumental stones of which it was made. The disciples, rightly so, were in awe of this structure and all the buildings they saw around them. And in his provocative way, Jesus casually mentions, it's all going to fall down. It's all going to fall down. Well, apparently they held on to this statement until they arrived at the Mount of Olives, where they quietly questioned Jesus about this. You have to believe that they thought they'd probably misheard Jesus. How could the temple of all things, the center of their Jewish faith, fall down? It made absolutely no sense. That's when we're introduced to this vision of the end of the world, Jesus returning, and whatever the aftermath of that event was to be. We heard him speak of various signs which pointed the way, which every generation since the time of Jesus has seen those same signs. And then we hear of the final instruction that nobody knows when this is going to happen. And friends, it's really no surprise why this strange theological idea has frustrated followers of Jesus for almost 2,000 years. On the one hand, we have very clear in this the teaching that it is going to happen now, which seems contradicted by the statements that no one knows when it will happen. And it's at this point that it's helpful to remind ourselves about the nature of apocalyptic material, apocalyptic writing, what it's about. And it's especially important to remind ourselves about some of the history of the Gospel of Mark, where we found this particular passage. We know there's general agreement that this Gospel of Mark is considered to be the first gospel that was created for our Bible, and it was probably written somewhere, scholars say, between the years of 67 and 70 in the Common Era. There's also a school of thought that says that this gospel was especially written for Gentile Christians. It was not written for Jewish Christians. And scholars point to the many explanations of the Jewish rituals that we hear about in Mark's gospel and trying to acquaint the Gentile believers with these rituals. The other thing to add to this is there's the distinct possibility that many say this was actually written for a Christian community that was located in Rome and not in Palestine. Well, why would that matter? Well, it's suggested that this was a time of persecution of Christians by the Emperor Nero. And it's also important to remember that the temple in Jerusalem was completely destroyed in the year 70. You see how these things are lining up? Well, as history teaches us, around the year 66, Jewish defenders, as they were called, killed Roman soldiers in an attempt to completely regain control of the city and of their destiny. And what was called the sacking of Jerusalem in 70 by the Romans, well, we know the result. Rome won. Effectively, Israel was wiped out. The temple was laid to waste. The great stones had fallen down. So when we hold up that knowledge against this passage in Mark, it really starts to make a little more sense, doesn't it? What we forget about apocalyptic material is that it was a specific kind of biblical writing. And it was written to people who were experiencing great persecution in order to give them hope. It's also important for us to remember, friends, that these Gospels were written long after Jesus' life on earth. And each of the gospel writers selected the sayings of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, that were most important to them and for the community for which they wrote. So, as strange as it may seem, this vision of the world coming to an end was a hopeful vision, believe it or not, because in the end, God wins. Ultimately, God triumphs. Rome would lose, the faithful would win. Now, it's really hard for those of us who have never honestly experienced any kind of extended domination and persecution. It's hard for us to get into the skin of our faith ancestors. Ours are two different realities. We have to be honest about that. And what has made it even more challenging is the reality that this second coming of Christ, of which apocalyptic material speaks, did not happen in the writer's lifetime or in the lifetimes of all successive generations. Given that scenario, it's always seemed a little odd that followers of Jesus are so fixated on this particular theological notion. Maybe we should see this as Jesus speaking in a metaphor. A metaphor which teaches us about the continuity of life. That which is familiar ultimately passes away, making room for the new. That which is familiar ultimately passes away, making room for the new. Certainly, that's one of the ways we might choose to approach this text so it makes sense for us. So for today, I would particularly like us to look back on the first verses which speak of the temple in Jerusalem being leveled. The temple, as we know, was indeed an institution. It was the center of Jewish faith. It was the place where the priests met God, so to speak. And like many institutions, the longer they are around, the more questions are asked of the institution. What is its purpose? What is its place? Is there still validity to this human creation? There is an aspect of institutions, friends, that really can be quite relentless in our lives. Most institutions require things always to be done the same way, and they are notorious for often working at a pace that's best described as glacial. There's a certain kind of tyranny that is the institution. Its well-being is based on finding new adherents or acolytes to the traditions of the past who pledge to preserve it into the future. Always the same, never changing. And in the process, many of the biases, the prejudices, sometimes the outright institutional subjugation of people, it never, never goes away. What may have once been highly visionary and a principled organization is no longer. We certainly live in times when our culture is challenging institutions in profound and provocative ways. The institution that used to be corporate America, for example, is wildly different from the model of the days when it meant a job for life. You remember those days? The institution that is our government certainly has reached a point where the obvious fractures within the system have hampered its ability to even function. And friends, the same is true for an institution of which we are all a part, the church. There are religious commentators and historians who believe the time in which we are living is one of great reformation. Further, they go on to say that the Reformation already is, and it's going to continue to be as unsettling as when Martin Luther began the Protestant Reformation almost 500 years ago. When we remember, when we look at history, that was cataclysmic for Europe. That is not language, friends, that institutions like to hear. In fact, that kind of language is often responsible for doubling down efforts to make sure that there will be survival at all costs. Regardless of our opinions, we here are part of an institutional church. And friends, it's not a jolly time for institutional churches. The value of networking and connecting, which was long a bastion of the American mainline church, is fading away very, very quickly in some cases. Why? There are certainly many who believe that it is the local expression of the church which is the most vital to people, the most important, the relational connections that are made every day, the possibilities for connecting with the nearby community in meaningful, pragmatic ways. There are large numbers of people who want to follow Jesus, who have tired of the process for creating rules and doctrines and dogmas, which seem to be more based in human fear than in hope and compassion and love. There are many who believe institutions are more concerned about preserving themselves at all costs. As history has taught us, institutions are the source of power and authority for those who are in leadership. When the institution is devalued, then the power and the authority of those same people are called into question. And we certainly know our nature as human beings. Once we have power, once we have authority, we never want to give it up, do we? Well, perhaps one of the ways we are experiencing Jesus' vision and comment about the temple and the stones being laid to waste is acknowledging that things that are of our human creation are always fluid. They're never permanent, even though we like to think so. Jesus' teaching points us towards God as being the only thing which is permanent, the only thing that is able to transcend our human condition. Sometimes, perhaps even frequently, our institutions get in the way of our being able to live into Christ's hope for our lives. And as difficult as it is, God's hope for our world is only realized when certain things are no longer, when certain things are no longer the focus of our attention. This reality, friends, is something we're experiencing right here at Westwood, our beloved congregation. When we started living into this vision of creating the loft, our friends who are worshiping over next door, when we created it as an expansion of this congregation's ability to connect with the community, we were not sure what we would find. Well, what we have found, as well as right here in our sanctuary worship, is that there are people, lots of people, who yearn for community and what it means to be a follower of Jesus in this particular time and in this particular place. What we're learning is that the church, as a brand, so to speak, or as an organization, no longer has a real appeal or pull for our culture. Real community and a real commitment to engage with life's realities in the place we live is of much more importance to people. And ultimately, friends, I believe God is much more concerned about our ability to be in relationship with each other. It's not about the institutions and the tyranny they can represent. Perhaps what we are to take from a passage like this in the Gospel of Mark is that we often put our trust in the wrong places, the things of our own creation. Jesus instead calls us to life. Jesus calls us to a life that is based in our love of God and in our connecting with one another in loving ways. Maybe it's not so bad that some things will pass away. What do you think? Amen.
Westwood United Methodist Church is located at 10497 Wilshire Boulevard in Los Angeles, between Westwood Village and Beverly Hills. Sundays are at the heart of this faith community's life, and we invite you to worship every Sunday at 10 a.m. A wide variety of opportunities for all ages are also available every week. To learn more, visit us on the web at www.westwoodumc.org or call the church office at area code 310-474-4511. I'm Janet Hoskins. Westwood United Methodist Church. Do justice, love kindness, walk humbly with God.